upgrade your tool storage for the new year with help from Menards. For heavy-duty storage that protects your tools, choose MasterForce. From shelving units to cabinets and so much more, you can keep your tools safe and within reach. Get versatile and durable storage from MasterForce today. Check out all our MasterForce storage in-store or check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Gun Day Brunch. I am your host, Caleb Giddings. I am not joined by my usual co-hosts this week because they are on vacation and I don't like to mess with people's vacations. This episode is brought to you as usual by Taurus USA as the primary sponsor and by Bleecker Street Publications. Joining me this week, however, instead of my co-host is my friend Frank Maloney, who I met through the dark days of Facebook when we were both in the Top Shot alumni group together. Because Frank, you were on season two, right?
Four.
Season four, golly Moses. See, that's hard to keep track of who is on what season. So, but before we get into the show, Frank, tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, what you do.
Oh, geez. What I do now? Well, I'm the owner and operator of Renaissance Firearms Instruction. We operate in New York and Pennsylvania. And I am a published author. I'm a field editor for American Rifleman and the ammunition editor most recently for Hook and Barrel Magazine. And a frequent flyer for Guns and Ammo and nice. Rifle Shooter. And I think we're at like 22 publications now that I write for. So I've been busy.
I will say, as the guy at Taurus that sends out a lot of the T&E guns, I see your name. There's a couple guys whose names come up as often as you, like, but you're easily within the top five most prolific out there. Like you're on the ball regularly, which, you know,
appreciate the guns too, you know, you make it easy.
That's having come into this job from, you know, the content creation side, from the writer side, I swore that like, unless the request is just very clearly not in good faith or from an absolute lunatic, I'll send a gun to anybody. You've got 5,000 followers on YouTube. Great. You know what that means? That means that like probably 500 people really care about your opinion. And if 500 people buy, you know, if out of those 500 people, 10 of them buy guns, I'm good. I'm set. And that's, you know, that's been my mindset. But what I wanted to like kind of start this one off with is, you know, it's been for me, it's now been 10 years or no, 15 years since
Top Shot. Longer for you. Yeah. You were season two, right?
OG season one.
You were season one. Okay.
Yeah. And it was funny because, you know, the title of this episode that people are going to see is How Top Shot Changed Our Lives. And it really did change my life. I was a State Farm agent when I did the show, you know, and I was, you know, side hustling, writing about guns for fun and stuff like that. But because I was on season one and because the concept was so novel, it allowed a lot of us who were just from the, I mean, you know, I hate this word now, just from the exposure, I quit my job. I was able to write full time, you know, and I was able to content create full time. And, you know, 15 years later, I still don't feel like I have a real job. I feel like I have like one of those Peter Pan ass jobs where I get paid to shoot guns and travel and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I can identify with that for sure.
So what were you doing before Top Shot? You know, obviously watching seasons one, two, and three before you applied for season four, but.
So, you know, one of the things I liked about Top Shot is they were pretty accurate in their representation of most things that happened, at least prior. You know, a lot of stuff was changed for TV, but for the most part, I feel like they did a good job representing at least my season, what we were doing. And that was true to life. You know, I had a very average life. I was 28, I think, when I applied. And still trying to find my way. You know, I lived in New York State and state jobs are always, always terrific. You know, so I applied to be a custodian. Pay was good. Benefits are great. I worked, I think, 190 days a year. And kind of just going that route for a while till I figured out what I wanted to do. You know, I didn't quite dare to dream, you know, I spent my time on the range just shooting, your typical enthusiast, you know, no military, no law enforcement background, no real training either. and just kind of making my way through life. Funny thing, I started watching that show, and I was one of the first people that had that used to do TV over internet before it was cool. Because cable, at least in New York, was ridiculous. It was like $180 a month, for my one bedroom studio apartment between cable and internet. So I dropped the TV, and I was watching the end of season two, because they just announced season three would be coming out, and they announced at the end of season two online on history.com, that apply for Top Shot. And I applied at, like, I remember I worked that 3 to 11 shift, 3 p.m. to 11 a.m. I'm sorry, 3 p.m. to 11 p.m. It was probably like midnight, 1 in the morning, something like that. And I was like, ah, the hell with it, I'm gonna just send an email. And I sent an email, and it was like 5 days before the deadline, just so I could say I sent the email. Had no aspirations. At this point, I had no idea where they even got people that competed from. And the next morning, or the next afternoon, I had a voicemail from one of the producers saying, "We need a video from you right away." At first, I thought it was my friends messing with me, and then I realized I didn't tell anybody because didn't have enough time really to tell anybody. And I mean, that's how that started.
So you were, I'm not sure if this is the appropriate phrase, but I think it'll resonate with people listening to this. So you were a janitor. And you went from that to Top Shot. And then how did your Top Shot experience go? Because I remember mine was surprisingly fun. Like even though I only made it halfway through, I didn't even make it to the finals, and I had a great time.
Yeah, so I mean, I was out at the end of the first episode. I was the third person off of the show. but when I say, if I put my ratio wise from screen time to success, I think I'm a winner.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was out there for, when I say there, California, where we filmed, oh geez, I think only like 3 weeks. And our episode started with a shoot off where 18 people had to shoot a single shot through an M14 and 200 yard target. The closest 16 made it onto the show, so I made it into there.
Oh,
Two
I
people went off
remember
right
that.
there, right? Greg and Forrest, right? And then at the end of the first episode, I was in an elimination match, and that's where I lost it.
I remembered the I for some reason, yeah, I it's been so long since I've watched any of them. It was one of those where I would watch them. I know for the first three seasons, I had a deal with Cheaper Than Dirt where they would have me do interviews with the contestants after they got eliminated, and
Gotcha.
then they didn't pick me up again for season four or for All Stars. But yeah, I remember that, like, you've got to shoot your way into that. So wait, you were out there for 3 weeks, even though you got body bagged on the first episode?
Yeah. So that first episode, that's what a lot of people don't realize when you're filming. That first episode was a full plus day of filming, just for everyone to shoot their round and then to go down range and check your hit and come back and do
Yeah.
five takes of, Kobe telling you however he wants to tell you're in or out. I felt bad for the people that were out because they made him do the take like three times. They're like, damn, what are you doing to these guys?
Oh,
But
yeah.
yeah, that was a full day of filming. Then we had like 2 days off in between where we're at the house. There was a day of filming was for the intro, and then the actual episode was 2 days. I mean, yeah, we were out there for 3 weeks. I was out there for 3 weeks.
Wow.
So, and then
Because I was out
after, once we
there
got going,
for.
then it was pretty much one day was an episode. So I think the last two guys were only there for, I think, another 3 weeks after that, something like that.
Yeah,
So
I was
it's
there
very top heavy, at
for
least our season was.
2.5 weeks because we did because the sort of breakdown was it would take about 3 days to film one episode, right? And since it was the first season, I think they were still figuring some stuff out with their
Oh,
production
don't
schedule.
worry. By season four, they were still figuring some stuff out.
That doesn't surprise me. My favorite behind the scenes Top Shot thing, and I've told this story, before, so some people probably heard this, but on our first challenge, it was a relay race with rifles, right? So, you
Oh,
guys
yeah.
starting in the first one, they shoot a target. Once that one gets hit, the next guy goes and he can shoot and all of that stuff. And in our practice session, I had just the biggest piece of shit SVT 44, the Russian semi-automatic that they were trying to make to be a competitor to the M1 Garand, and it never did because it sucks. And in the practice session, it was like every third round was a light primer strike. And I don't know if it was the ammo or the ancient ass gun or anything like that.
We dealt with that in our first episode too. It was funny because we had a Chopper Rhino,
Oh, yeah.
and we had to actually reshoot it with the Vaqueros, which was kind of, I don't want to say disappointing, but I was excited about the Rhinos, and I was like the only person that knew what they were. And then it was click, 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 click.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I'm getting all these light primer strikes, and I say to the, I'm like, all right, whatever, I got through the practice. So then I say to the competition lady the next day, I'm like, hey, what do we do when they're explaining the rules and all of this stuff to us? I'm like, what do we do if we get a misfire in the rifle, if I get a light primer strike? And she goes, oh, well, we've tested all these guns, so that's not going to happen. And I'm like, cool. So what happens on TV, what the viewers saw was I finish my obstacle, get into position, grab this rifle, throw it up into my shoulder at a 50-yard target, press the trigger, gun goes bang, target blows up. Looks great, right? What actually happened was I get into position, throw the gun into my shoulder, press the trigger, the gun goes click. I yell a stream of profanities as I grab the charging handle, rip it to the rear, go through three dud rounds before the gun finally goes off. The whole time, just every foul word that I can think of is coming out of my mouth as I curse this piece of shit Russian gun. And that's one of those things that sticks out to me as how the narrative of the show is true, right? Like the people that won the challenges actually won the challenges. Nothing was rigged. There wasn't any manipulation of the outcomes or anything like that. But what you see on TV isn't 100% of what happened in reality.
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. So after Top Shot, so your season was what? If you were season four, you would have gone in like 2014, 2015 time frame ish.
12? Why do I think 2012 is the date?
No, that might have been because they shot them on kind of a compressed schedule. So
Yeah.
yeah,
And
maybe
they
so.
and season three was before because ours was in the spring, and season three they did during the fall. Remember they celebrate the Marine Corps birthday?
Oh yeah, because they would shoot two seasons in a year.
Okay, so then yours, oh no,
So
that
yeah,
was
I
this
was
year. You
10. I was
also doing
2010, and then
right.
we actually shot in Did we shoot in 2010? Yeah, we shot in 2010. Yeah.
Well, let's see. RFI is, yeah, I think that's 15. RFI is 15 years old? I don't know. I have to sit down. I could find some emails for you.
So what did you do? All right, so I know for
I had my
me,
target hanging right there, but I didn't put a date on
I know for me, like I got off the show. And I actually went into a very tumultuous period of my life right after I finished, right while Top Shot was airing, I was also getting divorced from my first wife. So that was a very exciting time in my life. But I also ended up getting a job contracting with the NRA and moving to Seattle, and everything kind of worked itself out. So you talk to me, like, what happened after? Like, how did you go from, all right, so custodian, Top Shot one episode after, and to get to where you're at now.
Two episodes. I was in
Two
the beyond
episodes.
bullet.
Two
Okay, that's
episodes.
very
My bad.
important. Very
And you were
important.
also in the
Very important.
intro every fucking episode for the
No,
10 episode season.
I think they cut me. I think they cut me out of the intro after the first episode. I'm pretty
Oh, no
sure.
kidding.
Or maybe
Because what they.
it was just Greg and Forrest. I know they cut somebody out. Now I'm gonna have to go watch this stuff. So how did I get from there to here? Okay. Got back from the show. I had like 2 weeks of vacation left. So I used it. We used to have a family lake house up by the in the Poconos, Lake Pohnpeic. And I went and sat there for a little bit, spent some time there, and just kind of thought of where I wanted to go from there. And it was right around that time, it might have been that same week that the alumni page you mentioned, somebody invited me into that. And I started like just asking questions. I started talking to Ian Harrison. Right. And I asked him because he kind of did the dream, you know. I think he was working like a construction job or something like that, you know, and then before Recoil, he's working for Crimson
Crimson
Trace.
Trace.
And I asked him, I said, how do you make that jump? You know? And he said, get the SHOT Show, put something on a business card. And, you know, like I said earlier, I had nothing to put on a business card other than Top Shot. And he said, go get an instructor credential and go ahead and get the SHOT Show and start shaking hands. So, you know, at the time, you know, it was a decent job, but I mean, I still did not have much money at all. You know,
right.
I took like the $350 that I had, went and got my rifle instructor credential, came back, and I was like, well, if I spent that kind of money, I should probably start doing some formal instruction, you know. And the show just came out, and I started doing a little bit of advertising, and my private lessons picked up pretty quickly, you know. Originally from Long Island, New York, I was living in Long Island, New York, full time at this point. And not a ton of, it's funny, not a ton of civilian-based instruction there. Fun
not
fact.
A lot of private firearms instructors in Long Island. I'm shocked.
Can you imagine that?
I'm
but
shocked,
they got they
sir.
got they got two nationally recognized ones within like 6 months, because right before our episode, Mike Morelli, who I went to school Mike Morelli in season three, he started teaching as well. I forget who started first. It might have been like within a few months of each other, if anything. So anyways, business started picking up. I started doing well. And I got to the point where I couldn't maintain a schedule with one-on-one clients. I just didn't have enough time, which is a good problem to have. So I worked nights, you know, which meant I had all of my weekends. I had all of my mornings to host clients and do one-on-one lessons. So I started teaching classes. Then we got to the point to where I couldn't find enough weekends to teach the NRA basic rifle. And then during this time, I also got my pistol and shotgun instructor, where we just couldn't find enough time for that kind of stuff. And we were getting requests for shorter classes. So around this time, Groupon was getting really big. You guys remember Groupon? It's still out there. And they contacted us and said, is there anything that you'd be able to do like large group instruction? And we boiled the NRA rifle course down to a 2-hour course, where basically it's pretty attainable, because if you keep it to safety, function, a little bit of firearms design, really just more function, make it more of a buyer's guide, and then a quick range session, that resonated with a lot of people, because 6 months prior to this was the incident at Sandy Hook. And then the big gun buy that came about after that. So people were looking for quick training. So yeah, there you go. That was 2012, right? 13?
Yeah, 2012,
like
2013.
That. Yeah. So that got us pretty busy right off the bat. Before we knew it, we were doing 4,000 to 6,000 students a year. And that kind of continued on, you know, after that period of time, that big gun boom. We had some during the I'm trying to think if the hurricane was Hurricane Sandy was before or after that. I think it was actually right around the same time.
Sandy was 2011, because my wife was in New York for that.
Okay, so yeah, so then that was before, but we caught all the other big gun booms.
Nope,
after
2012,
that.
October of 2012
was Sandy Hook, right?
Yeah, no, Hurricane
Sandy,
Sandy
was
October of 2012.
Right.
And then
so
Sandy
there,
Hook
I knew
was
there was a few months December.
Right around there as well.
Yeah.
Golly.
So
what a shitty year.
So we kind of were busy from that gun boom. And then we rode into, what are some of the other ones? COVID. But long before COVID, we had just the general, basically the period of time when all the TV shows were still on, right? When we had... Mm-hmm. You know, regardless of how it ended, but you know, Sons of Guns were bringing guns into people's living rooms, Top Shot, obviously, and you know, all the other ones that were popular. But that kept things going for quite a bit. Then COVID, we were extremely busy during COVID, and then the New York State concealed carry course kept us very busy too for a few years, and then gun control kind of slowed the company down. But in that time period, I also started writing. Everett Dager, he's with Kimber right now. He was originally with Hornady. Actually,
yeah.
Still have the first product that was ever sent to me. We're still using it. He said to me, you know, we're sending you all this stuff. What do you think about writing? And put me in touch with some people. Started writing, and then just through the networking in the industry, I just p- picked up more and more publications to write for. About 3 years ago, or I'm kind of jumping around here, but early in those days, one of the first trade shows I went to was the NRA annual meeting, where I met Barb, my wife. She was in Indiana at that time. She actually moved to New York. Crazy.
Wow, she left America to go to New
To go to New
York for
York,
you.
right?
That's
So
impressive.
that's right here. You remember that?
This
For
right
this.
here, this for all of this.
So she's probably just a groupie, you know, Top Shot.
Yeah, you know, as one
She's gonna
does.
kill me. She's in the next room. She hears all of this.
If she, I mean, the groupie comment is definitely, that's the one that'll probably actually get you murdered.
I'm telling you, it's gonna end in violence. Anyways, so we bought a bigger place on Long Island. We're traveling back and forth to either the lake house in northeastern Pennsylvania or this new range that we found that goes out to 1,000 yards in central Pennsylvania. And 3 years ago, we decided to buy a house here and kind of slow down. So we're basically snowbirds. We spend, you know, a portion of time in New York, portion of time in Pennsylvania, a lot of time in Pennsylvania. We have our FFL and SOT here. We're type 7, which means we can manufacture NFA items, things like that. And we have 10 acres with a 100-yard range on, actually 200-yard range, a woods walk, and we're only now 15 minutes as opposed to 5 hours away from that 1,000-yard range. You know, I
And you've got
retired from
200
school at
acres on
age.
your, I mean, having the ability, one of the things that I struggle with, like my desire for. So I love cities, right? I love living in a city. I love walkable spaces and being able to walk to my favorite bars, restaurants, you know, all of that stuff, right? I really, really love that. But I also really want to be able to go out on my back deck and shoot, you know, like, and not have
So
the police show up.
that's kind of where we live in central Pennsylvania. It's the what's ruining the country, and I lived in one for 40 years of my life, is suburbia, you know. And New York, it's endless suburbs, then the city. Basically, if you're leaving Long Island, it's endless suburbs, the city, more suburbs, country, still restricted to basically city laws. So where we live here, it's you know, you have your cities. And then right at the edge is country, and it's you can almost mark it with a line, and that's pretty much where we live, you know. So like, if I need to get to Tractor Supply, Walmart, post office, you know, the municipal building, which is where the courts and everything else is, I'm about 15 minutes,
Those
you
are all
know.
very country ass stores too, like
Yeah,
Tractor Supply,
yeah.
Walmart, like, you
That's
know,
well,
I'm
that that's
like,
really it, right? Everyone wants to know how far is Walmart, and what do I do when I need to mail a letter.
yep, yeah, and you know, if you live where, you know, where we live, I'm like, how far is Target? Because we're fa you know, my wife is fancy, and
Oh
I don't
yeah.
even, I mean, I'm sure we have a Tractor Supply around here, but I
Buy
w
Walmart stuff for more.
you wouldn't even, you wouldn't, I couldn't find it. I mean, it, for us, it's basically, it's like, ooh, Home Depot and Target,
Wait,
baby,
there's a
let's
Lowe's
go.
there too. Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
well, where there's a
I know, 'cause I
Walmart,
was
there's
there
often a
every
Lowe's.
effing day.
Oh, man. So it's crazy just how, like, you know, that's really, I mean, that's kind of like the industry dream, right? Because we, I'm sure that you know, talk to people all the time who have this conversation, because I've had this conversation 1,000 times with people where they're like, oh, I love what you know, what you do looks so cool. How did you end up doing this? And, you know, the answer for me, and it seems like from you, is, well, I started and I just didn't stop, you know, like, and I think that's the thing that a lot of people don't understand, especially about the freelance game. Like, freelancing is a nightmare, and it's very rewarding, but you know, that pressure that you felt, that I felt, of like, if I'm not looking for work, I'm not getting paid, you know, and being able to put yourself in a position either with regular contracts or, you know, recurring work or stuff like that, where the position you're in right now, where you don't always need to be hustling for that next article, that next video, that next piece of content, that feels good, you know? I got myself a nice little corporate job. Like, do I miss sometimes being able to freelance and say whatever I want? Sure. Do I like knowing that my mortgage is going to get paid every month? Yeah. Yeah, I do.
Pseudonyms, man. You know, I mean,
I
pseudonyms.
know, right?
Be
Just start
whoever you
writing
want
everything.
on paper. Just leave your pictures out of it. You know, there's a few writers that do that, and I don't blame them. Tell you the truth, sometimes I wish I had a pseudonym for some stuff. You know, there are still some creepy people out there that will find you on social media, and you know,
Oh boy,
but you
do
kind of
I
invite it.
ever.
You're like a magnet for it.
You know, it's the funniest thing, and it really is. I mean, it really is funny to me, is that there is a version of me that exists in people's heads that has nothing to do with the version of me that's actually sitting here in this chair talking to you,
Oh
but
God,
they
I
are.
understand. I understand that very much, very,
Yeah.
very much.
Yeah, and I mean that's, you know, it start for me, that started when I went on Top Shot. You know, that was the earliest that I ever had to deal with it. And I never thought, you know, as another way that Top Shot helped me as a person and changed my life was Top Shot was the first time in my life that I had complete strangers and, you know, more than a significant amount mad at me for something that I did or said on television or a screen or their computer, right? And getting through that when my elimination episode aired really did help set me up for dealing with it later in life because,
Sure.
you know, I heard something years ago from a podcaster that I listened to, and he said and something to the extent of he's never had anybody come for him online that he'd want to trade lives with. And that's so fucking true. Like I look at, you know, I look out at that kind of stuff, you know, whenever it happens, and I'm you know, I wake up every morning with in the same house as my wife and my son and our dog. I go do a job I really like. I still have my military career unfolding before me, and I'm like, I don't want to trade places with, I wouldn't want to trade places with these people. They're saying insane shit to a stranger on the internet. That sounds
Right.
awful.
So I got to a point with that, not necessarily defending, you know, myself, 'cause I don't get it too much online. But I got to a point where, you know, I'll start like writing a response, and then I'll just say, you know what? I'm just too damn busy to do this. I'm like, I'm too busy to check the comments and go back and forth with this person. And then kind of like a version of what you said, you know, like I think about the person that has the time to do that kind of stuff, and I'm like, yeah, that's just sad for everybody, you know.
Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing too. Like I will get trapped, and I'll say this, I do get trapped sometimes because I enjoy engaging in the comments, like right? Like if somebody is asking me a question in good faith, if I feel like someone's asking me a question in good faith, I will engage with them. And what happens to me sometimes, and this is, you know, a little bit my own fault, is I will think someone is engaging in good faith and they're not, and I'll answer their question and it's a trap. And then they start, you know, yapping, and my instinct is to immediately yap back. And then if I get caught doing that, then I'm like, oh, I messed up. I messed up. It's okay. Because the other thing that that I'm completely unashamed about doing, and I will continue to do, is I have no shame whatsoever about blocking people, because there's this perception that I will never understand that on my social media pages or my corporate pages that I'm supposed to give you the freedom to say whatever crazy shit you want. That is fundamentally the same idea as you saying, well, if I come into your house, I should just be allowed to say offensive things at you and you can't kick me out. I'm like, no, that's
I
not how
use
this
the front lawn
works.
analogy. This is my front lawn. I determine what goes here. If I want you on my front lawn, I'm going to let you on my front lawn. If I don't, I'm going to tell you to leave.
You can
And
leave.
that's exactly it. I blocked a lot of people recently. And I got to the point where it wasn't just the things they were saying, but you know, there's people that use your page really just to hurt you and damage you. You know, it's just like these people aren't part of my life otherwise. Why would I let them on the page?
Oh, the other
You know
ones
who
that
I
I
give a lot of
love.
credit to? Like people that have like when people have like just like 100 or less friends on their page, and it's all people that they know and like norm and regularly engage with. You know, like I need to get my page down to that. Like during COVID, it was just like, yeah, let's just add everybody. You know, like every friend request that came through, or when something happens on TV or something, you get tons of them. And then after a while, you realize that these aren't industry people. You know, because I'll usually add anybody from the industry. or accept anybody from the industry, but you realize they're just people that follow industry people. And then I also just think about the people, we represent. We all have, groups that we represent. So if, I'm saying the wrong stuff or dealing with the wrong people, and I'm pretty loose on social media. I like to have a good time, but I don't really engage with, I don't feed the trolls anymore, but yeah, that's all part of it, I guess.
Yeah, and I think the that's a good note to end the episode on. Don't feed the if you are in my position or Frank's position, don't feed the trolls. If you are not in our positions and you would like to get into our positions, work hard. That is legitimately
Network.
how you get here.
If I have one word, I feel like the guidance counselors, at least when I was in school, never use this network. Whatever it is you want to get into, go to the trade show, find a reason or a means to get into the trade show and meet as many people as you can. Show up early and stay late. I mean, that's huge. And Barb has a great saying. She says, SHOT Show is great, but all the magic really happens at dinner and around the circle bar, and that's absolutely true. I mean, so many deals been sealed over handshake and dinner and drinks.
This
It's
industry
important.
especially is not, what you know is important because you have to be knowledgeable, but it is such a small space and it is so much based on relationships. And this episode, guys, is a great example. I had a guest drop out on me this morning. I texted Frank and I was like, "Hey, what are you doing at 1 o'clock?" And he's like, "Nothing." And I was like,
I
"Great, you
guess
want
I
to
could
do a
put pants
podcast?"
on for this, sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks for not
But that
making me
is it.
stand up.
That is it for this week. I want to thank Frank for coming on, chatting with me about the good old days. Frank, have you got any social media links or anything that you can put out to people to tell them where to find you?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm on Facebook under my real government name, Frank Maloney. Our training company is RenaissanceFirearmsInstruction.com. Renaissance Firearms Instruction on Facebook and Instagram as well. And my publications, you can follow them at all their respective tags. So American Rifleman, Guns and Ammo, Hook and Barrel. If you Google my name, or actually is a link that I'm actually starting to appreciate, is Muckrack. And I can send you that link if you want to link it somewhere. But Muckrack is the third party that just basically collects all kinds of material from writers and videographers and dumps it into a link. And they're pretty good at getting a lot of it, most of the digital stuff, but it's pretty cool. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks very much. And guys, thank you everyone out there for watching, listening, liking, doing all of the things that you do. If you're listening on Apple or Spotify, go ahead and leave us a 5-star review because that is the only platform where gun content is not being crushed by their algorithms. So make sure you follow us on there. And again, Frank, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, man. It's good seeing you. Great to be on the show.